Dash to speak and others to speak as well, if possible.
Well, we'll have to see. I don't think people can realize, you know, that our world, when I refer to our world, I refer to hundreds, thousands of various states of being according to one's spiritual development and progress, is in a sense, you might say, a mirror or a reflection of your world. Now, to some people that might strike them as being very odd, but certainly the lower spheres definitely are a reflection of your material world, inasmuch that many of the aspects of life on those lower spheres are not unlike life as you know it in your world, which is just as well that it is, I suppose, in a way. Otherwise, many a soul coming from your world would feel very, very uncomfortable, to say the least of it, and very much out of things, and very disturbed in their mind, and wouldn't be able to be at peace. But what I want to convey, if I can, is that every individual who passes from your world go to a condition of life which is best suited to them. And in consequence, since the majority of people only have a material conception of things, they do find themselves in an environment, in some ways at least, very like the earth, which is as it should be, I think. And until such time as they progress mentally and spiritually, and in consequence make it possible for themselves to be placed in an environment of a higher nature, they're quite content to stay for quite a while, if we can use time in regard to our side of life, in a sphere which is not so far removed in many respects from the earth. But people get such vague ideas on your side when they do think they know anything about this subject, about our spheres of life and activity. Some people have a sort of idea that they suddenly become transported into a very high plane of being in which everything is perfection. Well, I think that's one of the most erroneous things anyone can imagine. In fact, it's far worse than what a lot of people believe from church-going and biblical teaching. There's no such thing, as I've experienced, of a heaven or a hell. I think that condition of life here is to a great extent what you've made it on earth, and in consequence you might say it is a kind of reflection of your world in its various aspects. There is no such thing as imperfection, and there's no such thing, as I understand it, of perfection. I think we're all in the process of change, we're all in the process of development, we're all constantly seeing things from a different aspect, from a different angle, and in consequence we are moving from stage to stage or place to place, and we are gradually becoming more and more attuned into the higher realms or planes of thought. But I should hardly imagine, certainly I've never met anyone whom one might refer to as being perfect. I doubt if there is such a state, or if there is, it's so far removed from us that we can't visualize it or sort of be conscious of it. In any case, as I see it, if you reach perfection, then I should imagine life would cease to be interesting. It becomes very boring because there's nothing left to strive for. So it seems to me that all forms of life are in accordance with the individual's progress or lack of it. And since most people are fundamentally, you might say, good at heart, in other words, they want to do good, they want to become better men or better women, but they fail often. And yet often people are striving, and I think the whole point is that a person is no better or no worse than what he or she is at the point of passing. And nothing can save you, nothing can make you an angel, nothing can transport you into the high celestial spheres. Only you yourself, by yourself, what you've made of yourself, through your own actions and thoughts. I don't think creeds and dogmas and religions, in a sense, at least, have anything to do with it. A religion or a creed or a dogma may point the way. I mean, for instance, if you follow the teachings of Jesus, obviously, if you did follow his teachings in the right sense and put them into practice, obviously you would inherit a much higher plane of thought and being than me. Or at least, shall we say, doesn't strive to follow a great leader or teacher like Jesus. But the whole point is, it seems to me, that man cannot be any more than he has made himself. No one can do it for you. People can point the way. Religions can point the way. Great teachers and prophets can show you a path, which if you tread it faithfully and honorably and sincerely, will make possible great avenues or great roads of progress. But it all boils down to the fact that it must come from the individual. It must be an initial personal effort. It's something which you yourself must do as you think so you are, it seems to me.
Yes.
And that's why there's so many, I suppose you could say, conflicting ideas about life after death. I mean, you come to a silence and someone comes in one sphere and tells you one thing, in which they're completely, absolutely honest. Another will tell you something quite different, which merely means that they are from different planes of being according to their stature of development. You can't expect always to have people on the same plane at a thing like this, a seance or whatever it happens to be, where a few spiritualists gather together in harmony and sincerity. You are likely to attract all sorts of people. And often, of course, people are brought to you on lower spheres, from lower spheres, for help. And then, of course, you've got those who are earthbound, people who don't even know they're dead. And there are many a person who, for perhaps months, and maybe even years, and it has been known for centuries, are people who haven't even discovered or realized that they've actually left the earth. They think that they're still connected to the earth, which in a kind of way they are, because they're so mentally linked with the earth, so conscious of the earth, so much more interested in the earth, and the earth is the only thing that matters to them, that they are, in a sense, more of the earth than of the spirit, and in consequence they're earthbound, and they often get a kind of delight or pleasure out of linking up, perhaps, with someone who is earth, on the earth. You take someone who is a drunkard, someone who only found pleasure in visiting public houses and constantly being drunk in a state of inebriation, you'll find that sometimes a person like that gets tremendous pleasure out of going to public house to public house and probably eventually finding someone of a like mind and interest to attach themselves to, and that person on earth becomes the worst drunkard in consequence, because the person from this side is taking a delight in using that person, very much like a medium is used by someone from this side. Because you know, it's an extraordinary thing how a person in a state of drunkenness can be controlled by low entities who are very near the earth. I mean, in the old days, as you probably well know, when they had anesthetics and things, they used to get a man blind drunk, dead drunk, perform an operation. He didn't feel the pain to that extent. And it's perfectly true that the spirit, to some extent, is released when a person is very, very drunk.
Oh, I see, yes.
You know, it's an extraordinary thing how a person who is a medium is able to some extent, probably without realizing how it's done, make themselves open to receive all sorts of inspirations or impressions and be affected by entities from this side. I don't think anyone really knows on your side much about mediumship, how it works, how it functions. It's a very complex thing, and we on this side not always in a position to answer certain questions regarding it. But there's no doubt about it that mediumship is something which is inherent in mankind. Everyone has, or should have, and in my opinion they do have, a power of mediumship. It's something which is natural to the human race. The spiritual body and the physical body are two separate things, only linked together by the cord, which on death is severed, which means that the spiritual body has a separate existence from the body. But while it's on earth connected in life, it is, as it were, a combined thing. And there's no doubt about it that sometimes a person, quite unconsciously, without even knowing their medium, find themselves controlled by some other entity. They find themselves thinking things which normally are quite uncommon to them, not in their nature or makeup to think. And they find themselves doing things sometimes on the spur of the moment. Of course, I suppose the medical profession would say that that was due to some kind of mental aberration or illness. It may be so in certain instances, but I know full well other instances of cases where certain types of people on earth who were very psychic have been influenced by entities of a low order on this side and have committed things which they would never dream of doing in their so-called sane moments. I mean, many a person in a lunatic asylum, they're not in themselves mental. They are merely highly strung, sensitive people who are extremely psychic, who are used or controlled at times by entities who are earthbound. Actually, if the medical profession knew more about this subject, if they knew more about how individuals are affected by entities from this side, how they are used, how they are controlled, a great number of people with lunatic asylums could be cured.
Yes, sir.
Because I'm rather going off the subject which I proposed to talk about, but nevertheless it's all entwined.
It's very interesting.
It's all linked up together, you know.
Very interesting.
You can hear me, can't
yes,
you?
Yes, very
much. Sometimes it's difficult to know whether
yes.
it can be heard or not, you know.
Yeah.
Yes, we can.
But
hear
I'm very happy to answer any questions, because I mean, after all, I do want to answer the sort of questions that people might put to one, you know. I mean, the sort of things that you probably have put to you, you see.
But you said that some of these planes on the other side are not very far removed from this, the planes on this side.
Well, they're not. In fact, you might even say they intermingle.
Do they have such things as buses, trams, and all that sort of thing on those planes?
No, I can't say that. But when I said that there was a great similarity, what I meant by that was that certain aspects of life are very similar, they're alike.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean to say that there are buses and trams. But don't forget also that certain types of mentalities, because of those things that are considered essential or natural to them, have a kind of, if you like to use the term, appertaining to our world, that is the bell spheres of our world, which is perfectly true to say, they do have a kind of hallucination. In other words, they have a kind of mental world which has no basis in reality. You see, what one's got to bear in mind is that a person is no more or less than what he or she thinks. And if a person thinks certain things are essential and can only be happy or content or live with those things, they will create those things. And after all said and done, if you get not just one or two, but thousands of souls who are thinking on certain lines that certain things are necessary and essential to them, in consequence, they will be there, created by a process of thought, but they have no foundation in actual fact. In other words, it's a condition of life or mentality, if you like, which invariably soon passes. Some of the most difficult people to settle or be happy or contented, in my opinion, are those who've got very strong religious views, fixed, firm religious views. I mean, I've met people here who've linked together and they carry on much the same as they would have done on earth. That is, with their prayer meetings and hymn singing, waiting for the great resurrection day when they will come back onto earth in a physical body.
Yes.
You see, there are these sects or creedal doctrines that are pressed home onto people and accept them quite blindly without thinking deeply. And they really believe they are God's elect and they will be chosen to return to earth on the great day of resurrection.
Yes.
Dennis, it's the mental side which is so difficult to explain to people on the earth. They want something tangible, and when you say it's all in the mental, it's difficult to make them understand that, you see.
Yes, I realize that, but it is true.
Yes, I know it is, but I never quite know how to make them understand it.
Well, I don't quite know how you can either, except in that you can liken it unto a sort of dream state. I mean, for instance, if you sit and fall off to sleep, you dream, so-called, you could call it dreaming, but it is a mental creative thing which has no basis invariably in reality. I'm not now referring to when a person leaves the body and comes over here to a sleep state, which is an actual factual thing, but there are a majority of people who dream. It's really a conglomeration of thoughts that have collected or used or brought into a sort of picturization in dream state. Is a reality while you're dreaming it or living it during your sleep. You see, I mean, you may say, I had such an extraordinary dream, I dreamt so-and-so and so-and-so, and it was all so vivid and real.
Yeah.
But the point is, there was no basis of fact in it at all, but it was the mind creating these picturizations which to you were a reality while you were experiencing them. It may have only taken a few seconds in time itself, but nevertheless it was a reality while you experienced it. But the whole point is that there's no foundation in fact.
That's very interesting.
I mean, there are many illustrations that you can use, I think, in trying to explain certain things to people. I mean, it's a well-known fact, for instance, that a person who may have lost a leg or a finger or two off a hand, mm-hmm. at certain times, although they know those limbs aren't there, they're conscious of them.
Yeah, it's quite right.
I mean, the point is that you can harm the physical body, but you cannot really harm the psychic or spiritual body. I mean, a man may be affected by accident or warfare or whatever it may be and lose limbs, but he's still got those limbs in his spiritual counterpart, the physical body. And then it's an extraordinary thing how people who have lost limbs do sense or feel in those limbs that no longer exist. At least they think it's that they exist in the sense that they feel. But the point is they're feeling in their etheric body. Mm-hmm. It's the etheric body that feels pain really. The physical body has the pain, or rather is subject to the condition of pain or whatever the illness or cause may be, but it's the etheric body that really has the reaction. It is the etheric body really that feels.
That's the nerve centre.
The nerve centre, yes. I mean, when a person passes out, they are perfect in every detail, exactly identical as they were in their prime of life. That's why, as I've often said, or people have often told you, there's no such thing as old age over here. Old age doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. Old age is purely a material, physical thing that happens in the process of time. But the spiritual and psychic body, there is no old age. Because we have no age. You see, we are ageless. We are outside time. So how can we be connected with age? How can we be affected by age? The spiritual and psychic and mental body is ageless.
Do you remember to contact the higher planes at all?
Oh, yes. I have been able to contact various other planes of a higher order. But the point is that one cannot normally, that is, enter into a sphere or condition of life which is beyond you. You have to become worthy to enter into it. The point is that you can only find, shall we say, a kind of peace or contentment in an environment which you're best suited or adjusted. But the point is, one does receive visitors. We do receive souls from higher planes who do come to us to help us, to guide us, teach us, and so on. And we are given glimpses of higher planes by the process of their mind.
Yes.
Dennis, will you tell us how you actually spend your time, what you work with your own earth?
Well, I have so many interests. I'm very interested in rescue work. I do a great deal of that. I'm very interested in music, which is a great thing with me. I'm very, 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 very drawn to music. Music plays a very important part in our lives. Mm. There are all the musical instruments that you know upon earth and many more besides. And then again, of course, to get into more detail on this score alone about music, there are those who can draw music from the atmosphere by sheer power of will and mentality of themselves. I mean, for instance, a great composer, for instance, he can produce a great symphony with all the orchestra that would be needed for such a work purely on the strength of his own personality and his own mind. In other words, it is possible to create sounds by the process of thought. But of course, on the spheres which are not so advanced, they do have instruments, they learn instruments, they study instruments, they play instruments, and they have orchestras and so on, in the way in which you would expect and understand on earth. But the more highly advanced souls, who have learned processes which are far beyond my knowledge, quite frankly, have been able to draw upon the atmosphere and the power which they possess to create enormous harmonies of sound, tremendous symphonic orchestrations and so on, surely by thought process.
In other words, they do it mentally without writing it down the
paper. Yes. I mean, a great composer, shall we say, like Chopin or someone mm-hmm. like that, would be able to create great music without sitting at a piano, without dotting down notes and notation and all the rest of it.
He's got it in his mind.
The point is that even so, with a great musician on earth, in his mind, I mean, you take Beethoven, I think, whilst he was deaf, or was it Wagner?
Oh, he was deaf, absolutely.
Yes. Well, I mean, he couldn't hear a thing.
Yeah.
But he carried it all in his head.
Yeah.
He was able to play music and create music. Same applies here, in a sense that
A great artist, so anyone who is really great in their particular sphere of work, we're talking about musicians now, they can create enormous symphonies, the most glorious harmonic sounds, by the sheer willpower of their own personality and their own soul. In other words, it is really the fundamental soul personality. You see, the point is, there are so many definitions, it's very difficult to know what to use, in a sense, to know what people on earth will quite understand, because there are so many different aspects of an individual. You see, you consider an individual a physical person and a psychic person, that is, they have a physical body, a psychic body, or an astral shell, or body, if you like, yeah, and a soul, and a spiritual body, and so on. But one must realize that the perfect being is when all these things are in complete harmony, all these different aspects of a soul, of a personality. The point is that we have many bodies according to our development, and it's possible to go over past lives, and I'm talking now not about lives on earth, reincarnation, I'm talking about lives in spiritual plane. It's possible for each aspect of oneself through time to see oneself in retrospect, going backwards and backwards and backwards, and see how you have developed from place to place or sphere to sphere, and that which has brought about that condition of self as you are at the moment. But one is always ever conscious of the tremendous, and when I say tremendous, it really is tremendous possibilities. This is a life of tremendous possibilities where there is no cessation, where you're constantly moving upwards and forward, where you're constantly learning more and more, growing, expanding, becoming more, if I can put it like it, in a way, and I'm not being, I hope, in a sense, blasphemous, what I mean is you're becoming more godlike, you say.
More spiritual.
Yes, of course, spiritual for life.
Very interesting. In fact, that applies to everything. It's not only you, it applies
to every form.
Every form of development,
which is of the soul. And there are certain aspects of life which have no interest to us. I mean, on Earth, for instance, there's no need for mechanics over here. By that I mean, there's no need for machinery. There's no need for cars, no need for trains, no need for buses, and all the things which are essential to you. They are purely physical things, where you measure distance. We have no distance. We have no time. You can measure a distance from spot to spot. We don't. We have no distance. In the same sense, we are outside of time. We're outside of space. The distance.
Yes.
Some of these things, of course, are impossible to explain to you.
Yes.
Certain of these things can only be experienced, not explained.
Yes. But how do you spend your time in if you have nothing like mechanical thing of any kind or these things, how do you spend your time there?
Well, then there are so many different ways in which one can spend what you term time. Then, as I've already said, we're not subject to time.
No.
I mean, for instance, there may be some women prisoners who are very interested in needlework. You may say, well, what's the point of that? How do you need needlework? Even when you've made it, assume that you make it in the same state that you make it on earth. Then if it gives a person great pleasure and joy to create something that's beautiful, that takes what you term time, although, as I say, we're not conscious of time, it does mean something. I mean, people have their homes here. People have homes which are very real and solid to them, as your world and homes are solid to you. We have houses. We don't need fire because we don't need warmth. We are surrounded by warmth, a natural sort of warmth which comes from some source which I can't really explain. We don't have the sun, as you understand it, but we have plenty of light. We don't have intense cold. We don't have snow. At least I've never experienced those conditions of life, but it may be so that on certain spheres they exist. But I don't think they do. I certainly don't think there's any need for those things. Those things are purely appertaining to your physical world. You're outside the range, vastly outside the range of your world, and yet we can be conscious of it and do come and see you and try and communicate with you. And certainly those on another sphere are affected by earthly conditions, and also the elements maybe, I can't say. It's possible that the very lowest spheres are lit by the sun. It is feasible.
Yes.
Yes. In the very, very lowest sphere, it's completely dark.
I've never experienced that condition. I've never been, shall we say, been to any sphere which would be as low where there's complete darkness, although it's feasible it may exist.
Yes.
I don't know. Sylvia was saying something. I don't know. I don't think there is. I wouldn't like to think so, but it's feasible. Maybe so. I think there's only one darkness. That's the darkness of man's mind.
It's what is reality, then, isn't it?
In every sphere, in every experience of life over here, thought is reality. So it is in your world. After all, why is your world in such chaos? Why is there so much in your world that causes anguish and uncertainty and unrest? Because of the conditions of men's mind. Minds which are full of fear.
Yes.
While you have fear in your world, you have all the things which come from fear.
You travel by thought, into distances.
Yes.
Everything's by thought in your...
Yes, there again, you see, we've already been on this point, but there again it's difficult to explain. We are not conscious of space or distance. And yet everything in our immediate vicinity, as far as the eye can see, is real and solid. And yet, there is no distance. If you want to be... I suppose I've got to use the term distance, make it understood to you. You can travel there by the process of thought.
Mm. Now, process of thought, say when you pop over to your grave, you're quite a stranger there, and you don't have any distances like towns or places to go to. Do you have to sort of create them by thought, or how do you know where to go to by thought and what to do?
Well, I think the whole point there is that you have a consciousness given to you here which comes, as it were, almost in a natural way, that you are conscious of other places. I mean, you don't have to be told about a certain place at a distance. Well, you know it's there, you know it exists. I mean, the point is that we do have towns.
Yes.
I mean, when I talk about towns, I don't necessarily mean a town like Birmingham or London or Coventry. What I mean is communities of people where they dwell in peace and in harmony and in love together, where they have their homes and their interests, where they have vast buildings which are used for various things, such as music and for all forms of artistic endeavor. You see, to us, the only things that are important are the things that spring from the soul, the things that are, I was going to say real, because they are real to us. But I mean, after all said and done, you look back through man's history on earth, what are the things that come shining out above all other things, when wars are forgotten and races are forgotten and great names are forgotten? The things that matter most are the things that man has created in beauty and in loveliness. Great music, for instance, or great pictures, or great poems, or great books. We have great libraries here, vast libraries of books. And you can read all the literature of past centuries. And you can read in any language. You read by the process of thought. You interpret it by thought.
Yes.
Well, you mean somebody passing over now could read something in Chinese, so they wouldn't have
understood. Ah, no, not immediately.
Oh,
not immediately, no.
No,
no, again, it's a matter of how you've developed. It's all these things are stages of being. You have to learn how to live here. The same as you have to learn how to live on earth as you grow from a child into an adult. You are taught, you learn lessons. So there are new lessons to be learned here. You've got to learn how to live in a new existence, a new form of existence. You may start off over here in a very simple way, in a condition of life, as I've already said, near to the earth conception of things. But as you progress, then you learn new experiences and methods which are essential, and you begin to realize the tremendous possibilities of this life, the great wonders that lie in front of you, and the great things that can be accomplished, and the enormous, tremendous, vast opportunity. And to me, that's the most wonderful thing here. There's such great opportunity in every direction. And man isn't sort of held back because of, well, so many things, lack of finance, lack of education, and so on. On this side, every man has an opportunity to develop himself in whatever way he wishes to go. I mean, the point is, there are so many roads there. Again, we come back to the old story, talking about religion and peace and darkness, all those things. There are only roads. Instead, some of them are more difficult than others. Some are cluttered up with error and heaven knows what else. But the point is that the founders of those religions on earth In Derby were staying sensible, good men who had the illumination of the spirit. And the point is, over here, there are different aspects of life, different roads which one can take, but they all eventually bring you to the plains which are the natural inheritance of man. There are all different processes or roads of approach. Chinese may take one way, Buddhists may take another, the Hindu may take another road. Over here, they're all united eventually. All roads lead to the same centre. Mm.
That's it. Do you have ambition over there, ambition to our past?
Do I do what?
Have the ambition to do things?
Yes, but all our ambition is in the right sense. Our ambition is for the betterment not only of self, but for all those around and about you. Don't forget, we also have children here. Children are a reality to us, the same as are for you. Children have glorious opportunities.